Welcome back to Trailblaze. This is Jamal Simmons. I have joining with me today my good friend, and you've seen him here before, Chuck Rocha. Chuck Rocha from Solidarity Strategies has done just about everything there is to do in politics, including wearing one of the best hats there is all around. So, Chuck, thanks for joining me after the big blockbuster election day.
Ooh-wee, these Democrats walking around Washington, D.C. with their chest poked out. Now I'm telling you what.
Now, do they deserve that? Is that something that the Democrats deserve, having their checks poked out, or overreading what happened on Election Day?
Both, like normal. Like, we had a great night. We should celebrate our victories. And we didn't win a little bit. There was an ass whooping for everybody. We overperformed everywhere. But there's also a word of caution anytime you win that big. If you think that there's not, think about where you were a year ago when Donald Trump had wiped the floor with all of us, overperformed in 90% of all the counties in America compared to 4 years prior to. And then 1 year later, he gets his ass whipped by a bunch of puny Democrats. Us beating Donald Trump. That just shows that things can move very quickly. And what we saw last night is what this party has become, is we're now the overeducated, we show up all the time voters in special elections and off-year elections. So yes, did our performance in Northern Virginia increase double? But that's only because about 40% of the voters actually showed up compared to a presidential election. You need to take your victory and learn from it, but also know there's still work to do for the midterms.
So, all right. So listen, Chuck. You know, we had a big night last night in New Jersey. We had a big night last night in Virginia, and obviously in New York City. You were involved a lot in the Bernie Sanders movement, and you've seen a lot of these voters who represent the progressive base of the party. What did you think about what happened in New York City?
I think that it's really exciting. Do I think that Mondani's strategy of campaigns works everywhere? It does somewhat, because everywhere last night, people won when they were talking about affordability and the price of housing and the prices of utilities in New Jersey, in Virginia, talking about the price of groceries. Talk about the prices of everyday shit, Democrats. We can stop talking about democracy and abortion and all this other stuff that we think's winning this election. Folks right now is worried about paying the bills. Democracy is important. Abortions, for God's sakes, is super important, and what they've done is horrible. But last night, you saw an election centered around affordability, no matter if you were the far left or the far right of this party, and all of that delivered for the Democrats with a little sprinkling in of everybody pissed at Donald Trump.
Everybody pissed at Donald Trump, for sure. You know, that's this thing about talking about the price of everything and the affordability is something that really, you know, is about what you should be for as Democrats. And it just seems to me, when people focus too much on Donald Trump, we stop thinking about why somebody should show up and want to vote for a Democrat, not just want to vote against a Republican. And that's the thing for me. We have a lot more work to do.
You know, you've got to tell people why they should fire the person who's in charge and give them a reason. And it's easy to do that with Donald Trump, but you have to give them a reason to hire you. And that's the part you're getting at, Jamal. It's like, how do you help bring those costs down? And when you're looking at the price of tariff being passed along to people or the utility bills, I'll give you a little behind the curtains in New Jersey. My firm was fortunate enough to have the contract with the New Jersey Democratic Party's coordinated campaign. We knocked on 100,000 doors in Passaic County of Latino households. And Passaic County almost turned a 180 from where they were just a year ago. Of course, it's because Solidarity Strategies were knocking on doors. But the real reason was that, and folks at the door were telling me three things. Interestingly enough, they were talking about the price of insurance and how the price of their insurance keeps going up. The price of their utility bills keep going up. And then coffee, hamburger, things that people use every day, like that kind of thing. I remember a woman saying to me, that who's on food stamp assistance, saying when I used to could buy a month worth of groceries with my SNAP benefits. And for the last year and a half, she can only get about 2 weeks out of the same money, and her money hadn't changed. It's just crazy. The price of all the basic shit she was buying has been going up.
That's crazy. I mean, you know, and I think those of us who've ever been on food assistance, I'll put myself in that category, you know what it means when you walk into the store, you go, they got a certain amount of money of what you can spend on and how you got to stretch that out. I would watch my mom when I was a kid have to stretch out this, you know, these like kind of store-bought products, store-brand products, and make them fit our family of four or five. So I know this is real
thing. The Hilo brand.
Absolutely the Hilo brand. Not the Cheerios, but the Toasted Oats.
That's right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
So the price of everything is going up, and our Democrats really, I think, getting at it. I want us to talk more as a party about getting at these prices and talking about what that's going to mean for the average everyday voter. And it does seem like the people who fashion themselves as the moderates, the centrists, the, you know, the more establishment politicians aren't ready to stick their foot in it. They're not ready to say, okay, if you got a moderate strategy, tell me how your centrist strategy is going to actually change the life of a human being. Not just tinker around the edges of the system, but you're going to change the life of a person. So for me, here's what I would say. Because I don't know if this is moderate or if this is progressive. But I would say 2% of African Americans get investment income in this country to start companies. What if we doubled that to 4% of African Americans? What for Latinos who are less than 1%? What if we tripled that? We went from 1% to 3% of the investment income goes to Latinos. Now, is that a moderate policy or is that a conservative policy or is that a progressive policy? It's going to achieve a progressive goal of getting people real money to start companies, to take care of their families, but it's also going to make sure that we're using the capitalism that we have to help people's lives be better in a way that's market-based. So I don't know which way you call that, but if I'm a centrist, that's the kind of thing you got to be putting your foot on the gas about.
I'd call it common sense. And I think that we've let Republicans steal those two words of common sense. Reporters, TV, me and you are on CNN all the time, and the people like to ask me and you as the Democrats, well, tell me about this infighting between the progressive and the moderate and the progressive wing. I'll tell you that there's a lot of moderates out there who believe everybody should have affordable health care and that they should have $15, $20 minimum wage. There's some basic things. It's nice to put us in these little cute boxes, but the American people are smarter than that, and they cut across the lines of all of this stuff. You can talk about the trans stuff or abortion stuff or religious stuff or gun stuff. Like, that's all around the fringes. People aren't showing up at the ballot box and not really knowing who they're going to vote for if one of those big issues is something that's motivating them. If guns is your thing, I'm not going to talk you into voting for a Democrat. If some kind of other thing is your thing, like, those are already baked in. We don't fight over the right of the party or the far left of the party, but the majority of Americans that are in the middle, some of them more progressive, more not progressive, all depending on what you categorize that as. We've got to get back to talking to working middle-class voters around affordability and what we're doing as a country or a government to help make that ease while stopping corporations from raping and pillaging your family with rising in rates of your insurance, rising in the rates of what it costs to buy a home, rising in the rates of what it costs to buy a vehicle. All of these things are rising cost while these corporations are making billions of dollars. People, even redneck Mexicans like me, can understand that.
So let me ask you a little bit about the Latino community. So we saw in 2024, everybody was talking about how Trump increased his percentage, maybe double digits among Latinos. That doesn't seem like it held true in last night in New Jersey or in Virginia, where those Democratic candidates for governor got close to about 70% of the Latino vote. What's going on with the Latino vote? Tell me about it.
You have a
because you're the expert. I'm going to make you the expert today.
Yeah, let's be sure. There's very few things I'm an expert on, but this is one of them. So tune in and get your pencil and write this down. The thing is that it's a fluid vote. There is a group of Latinos that have all come of age, which is a gigantic part of the overall electorate. For those of you at home scoring, you nerds like Jamal and me, this vote is very different than 20 years ago. 20 years ago, this was a majority immigrant voting bloc who had become citizens, most of them in the 86 Ronald Reagan amnesty, where he made a whole bunch of people U.S. citizens. Well, today, it's their daughters and their sons and their granddaughters. The majority of voters now, Jamal, that are quote-unquote Latino voters, are second and third generation. They speak way more English than they do Spanish. They're more assimilated. They live in the suburbs more. They've made more money. But the key thing here is that there's so much younger. The average age of a Latino voter is only 29. The average age of a white voter is in its 50s. Average age of a black voter is in its late 30s. So you just start with a demographic that's just so freaking young. And guess who we do a shitty job at communicating with in a multimedia world right now? Latinos. So what you have are them looking for solutions, but they gotta watch more than just three TV channels to get there. So let's go back to this anxiety about affordability, because this ties into what your question is. It's a good question. Is there's anxiety about a young couple, a young Latino couple trying to make it in an age when everything is going up. And then on top of that, they have the anxiety of ICE agents and the militarization of their streets, of worrying about their mother, fathers, their TOs, their TIAs getting deported because Donald Trump is taking law-abiding immigrants and trying to deport those who've been here for 20 years. So there's all this anxiety. And Latinos gave him a shot and was like, sure, we want shit to be cheaper. Sure, if you deport criminals, I'm even for that. But then what they saw was much different than what they had voted for. That's why you saw this clap back in this last election.
You know, and I just learned recently, I was listening to our good friend, Maria Teresa Kumar, and she was talking about how in many Latino households, like in my household, I kind of inherited my politics from my parents. My parents were Democrats. I listened to them talk about politics. I kind of inherited it from my parents. But in a lot of Latino households, the parents inherit their politics from their kids because the young voters are the ones who are coming home and engaged in the issues and talking to their mamas, their papas, and their tios and tios about what's going on in the country. And they might be driving some of the politics in that family. Does that hold true for you? Do you think that's a legitimate slice at it?
It's definitely a part of it. It was so much a part of what we did with Bernie Sanders. As you know, I was a senior part of that campaign for both of those. We even had a program where we would have a program for young people to go get their grandparents and their parents Bernie Sanders literature, because we didn't have problem with young people with Bernie Sanders. We had problem with old people. Mm-hmm. So we were using the grandkids as validators. I think you saw a lot of that with Mondani last night, to say it's okay. He's not a communist. Sure, he's a democratic socialist, but mama or grandmama or abuelo, it means that he wants to cap your rent and get you a bus that's fast and free. That's easy things to explain. It's kind of like when you have a red hat and you put on it, Make America Great Again. People can understand those simplistic things. And as Democrats, sometimes we try to make it way too complicated. We talk down to people. We sound a little preachy, like we know what's best for them, when they just want some common sense solutions. And you have an electorate that's very young and trying to figure out who's actually with me. Are these Republicans full of shit? They sound crazy, but they look strong and tough. I like strong and tough, especially with Latino men. And last night you saw that bounce back because folks were like, whoa, 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 this ain't what we signed up for. And on top of that, shit's still expensive.
That's right. Black men like that strong and tough too. All right. So let's talk about the future. What happens tomorrow when you go back out and pitch a client and you say, listen, we had a good day on election day. We got a big election coming up. If you want to have the same result in your campaign that they had in New Jersey and Virginia, here's what you need to do. What's your argument?
Call Chuck Rocha 555 Big Daddy. No, I'm joking. You have to, yes, you call Chuck Rocha. But what you really do is you learn the lessons that went right last night and the things that went wrong. There wasn't much that went wrong with Democrats, but you take it with a grain of salt. Build off of this affordability issue. Get more nimble with your social media. Expand your target list when you walk into a congressional race and not just talk to the off-year voters, but really look at the modeling of what we've always, me and Jamal are old. So we remember in an off-year election, the whole thing was about the drop-off voter, that voter that votes in a presidential election, but not in the midterm election. Well, this time, if you don't do that piece right, you could be turning out Republicans, because Republicans have become the low propensity voter. So you got to really watch how you're strategizing these campaigns. And that's my word of caution. Yeah, we kicked ass last night, but the turnout was less than half of what it would be for a presidential year. So you take the lessons you've learned, affordability, being nimble when it comes to social media, being nimble when you look at expanding your target list, but then also showing up and hiring real people to have real conversations. The reason people like Mondani is that he come across as a real person. Yeah. And he was very authentic. It's hard to believe in politicians these days because folks think they're all full of shit. Well, even if you didn't agree with everything Mondani, he was very charming. And I don't mean just good looking, but he was very good looking. Yeah. But he's also charismatic when he spoke. And folks were like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that smile. I was just going to say that smile is crazy. I mean, everybody's like, you know, they're making fun of it now on Saturday Night Live because it's so, it's everywhere. Everybody loves it.
It works.
All right. It does work. Look, people like people. Look, here's what people like. People like winners, right? And so when you're winning and everybody else is with you, people want to be with you too. Let's see what it's going. People like thinking about the future. Talk to me about what's going to happen to me next, not talk to me about what happened to me last, what that person did to me last week. And people like a kind of that's a sunny optimism, but like some sense of, look, we're going to do this. We can have a good time doing this. We can win. It's all possible. We got to get together. We got hard work to do. But if we do that hard work, we can get somewhere with that. And I think sometimes if we all spend a lot of time, you know, clutching our pearls and fretting about, oh, what might happen here, what might happen there, we're going to miss the magic that can happen when we actually get people activated and moving and ready to go out and accomplish something big. And that's what I think has been happening right now with the Democrats.
There's something else happening with the Democrats that me and you've talked about in private. And there's a reckoning of a time is the coming of change.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's happening with Democrats kicking and screaming. And what that means is there's a whole bunch of people in this party that were the generation above us, Jamal. They're all in their late 60s and 70s. I'm not going to put age on you, but I'm 56 years old. I've earned all these white hairs.
I'm not that far
and
from
you. I'm though. Seen as the youngster.
Right.
I'm seen as the youngster in this party when I should be the old man in this party and I should be finding 30-year-olds to do what I do, which is what I've done with my firm. Hence why we're the best at what we do in cultural competency is we are young Latinos talking to young Latinos besides the old man who talks to the Mexican redneck Latino. So we've got every base covered. But to my point is, look at the change last night. Mondani is 33, for God's sakes. I don't know how old the Abigail or Mikey is, but they can't be but in their 50s if they're not
they're
in their
the
late
same 40s. Age.
They're not old ladies.
They're in their early 50s, I think.
Yep. They are up-and-comers. And in the House, Nancy Pelosi's not the leader. It's Jeffries, whether you like him or not, and Aguilar. And I'll tell you, Chuck Schumer's on his way out. Now, that don't mean I need him to be fired tomorrow. I'm anti-Schumer. I'm just saying he's old. He will be gone in the next 5 years at some point. He probably won't run for re-election. There's a lot of changes that's going to happen in our party. And for those of you listening, you insiders and you operatives, what we have done a really shitty job at is opening up space for new ideas, new firms, and new people making strategic decisions for our party. Lots of well-intentioned folks who have had the same campaigns going back to Clinton, Obama, and Biden have been in charge of almost every election, including a lot of them last night. And I don't bewill any of them, and they should make their money. But there hasn't been a whole lot of new black firms, any Latino firms, any AAPI Asian firms started because it's hard to break in because we don't have capital, to your point, to raise money to start these firms. So you start losing a little of that cultural competency as those demographics become a larger and larger part of the American piece of the puzzle that wins elections. Luckily, last night, we all reacted to the hatred of what Donald Trump has done to the country. But we can't rely on that every election because we're going through these secular motions of, okay, we win a few, we lose a few, but if you want to even it out, we need to make sure that most of America is represented in American politics, and that's the biggest piece we're missing right now.
You know, you said something about social media, and one of the things I think we have to be mindful of, even people like you and me, I mean, I'll put this more on me than it is on you. If we're not a little uncomfortable with what's happening in social media, then it's probably not going far enough. Right? Like, I think young people are going to always be thinking about doing things, saying things in a way that make people who are older a little bit uncomfortable. And if they're not making you uncomfortable, they're probably not leaning in hard. And so I tell all my friends, get comfortable with being uncomfortable, because if we haven't learned anything else from Donald Trump, he's willing to say and do anything to talk to his voters in whatever way those voters need to hear. And we're going to have to do the same. And that means sometimes we're going to say some things that maybe make us feel a little like, oh, wow, is that okay? Should we say that? Yes, we should say it. We should do it. Get out there. We're going to make some mistakes. But here's the good news. If you make a mistake, you get up tomorrow, you do something else different tomorrow, nobody will remember. Keep that ball moving forward.
You couldn't be more right. And what we do with campaigns, especially as Democrats, is that we're the smart, and I'm using bunny ears for those of you not watching, we're the smart party. So we have lots of lawyers and lots of folks with master's degrees.
Too many lawyers.
So we are really cautious around everything that we do. And the first thing we do with a candidate is we put bubble wrap around them and we give them tested talking points and we make them very robotic.
Yep.
Where they're very, that means they come off as very inauthentic. That's why Mondani was this superstar. That's why Bernie Sanders is. And to be honest, that's why Donald Trump was. He sounded like a regular person, even though he might have been an idiot. But we have to get a lot more relaxed with the way that we do these things if we're going to ever kind of be trusted by the American electorate. You can say, well, Chuck, we were trusted. We won all these elections last night. Again, a little point of caution. We won with who showed up last night in a huge way. But there'll be way more people show up in a midterm and almost double that for a presidential. So we could be working on that now, becoming, reverting back to the party that I joined back in the day. I've been the party of workers, the party of unions, the party of poor, middle class, and rich people aspiring. This, listen to me, progressives, aspiring to be rich. Absolutely. It's okay to want to make money and be a success. We've made that be, why is that bad? Why is that evil? Sure, money can be evil if you use it for evil, but I've made little money and I've hired 136 young brown and black kids with the money I've made. You can use money for some of the best organizing and best work out there if you know what you're doing.
That's right. That's right. All right. Chuck Rocha, thank you for letting it all come out the straight way here right after the election day. And you are my friend, one of the bright lights in this party. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, my brother.